37. Cranes. Tick removed the little panel from the back of the Mass Neotech unit, using a dental pick and a pair of jeweler's pliers. "Lovely," he muttered, peering into the opening through an illuminated lens, his greasy waterfall of hair dangling just above it. "The way they've stepped the leads down off this switch. Cunning bastards." "Tick," Kumiko said, "did you know Sally, when she first came to London?" "Soon after, I suppose." He reached for a spool of optic lead. "'Cause she hadn't much clout then."
"Do you like her?"
The illuminated glass rose to wink in her direction. Tick's left eye distorted behind it. "Like her? Can't say I've thought of it that way."
"You don't dislike her?"
"Bloody difficult, Sally is. Do you know what I'm saying?"
"Difficult?"
"Never quite got onto the way things are done here. Always complaining." His hands moved swiftly, surely. The pliers, the optic lead. "This is a quiet place, England. Hasn't always been, mind you. With the troubles, then the war. Things move here in a certain way, if you take my meaning. Though you couldn't say the same's true of the Flash crew."
"Excuse me?"
"Swain, that lot. Though your father's people, the ones Swain's always been so chummy with, they seem to have a regard for tradition. A man has to know which way's up, know what I'm saying? Now this new business of Swain's, it's liable to bugger things for anyone who isn't right there and part of it. Christ, we've still got a government here, not run by big companies. Well, not directly."
"Swain's activities threaten the government?"
"He's bloody changing it, redistributing power to suit himself. Information, power, hard data. Put enough of that in one man's hands." A muscle in his cheek convulsed as he spoke. Now Collins' unit lay on a white plastic anti-static pad on the breakfast table. Tick was connecting the leads that protruded from it to a thicker cable that ran to one of the stacks of modules. "There, then," he said, brushing his hands together. "Can't get him right here in the room for you, but we'll access him through a deck. Seen cyberspace, have you?"
"Only in stims."
"Might as well have seen it, then. In any case, you get to see it now." He stood. She followed him across the room to a pair of overstuffed ultra-suede chairs that flanked a low, square, black glass table. "Wireless," he said proudly, taking two trode sets from the table and handing one to Kumiko. "Cost the world." Kumiko examined the skeletal matte black tiara. The Mass Neotech logo was molded between the temple pieces. She put it on, cold against her skin. He put his own set on, hunched down in the opposite chair. "Ready?"
"Yes," she said.
And Tick's room was gone, its walls a flutter of cards, tumbling and receding against the bright grid, the towering forms of data. "Nice transition, that," she heard him say. "Built into the trodes, that is. Bit of drama."
"Where is Colin?"
"Just a sec. Let me work this up." Kumiko gasped as she shot toward a chrome-yellow plane of light. "Vertigo can be a problem," Tick said, and was abruptly beside her on the yellow plane. She looked down at his suede shoes, then at her hands. "Bit of body image takes care of that." "Well," Colin said, "it's the little man from the Rose and Crown. Been tinkering with my package, have you?" Kumiko turned to find him there, the soles of his brown boots 10 centimeters above chrome yellow. In cyberspace, she noted, there are no shadows. "Wasn't aware we'd met," Tick said. "Needn't worry," Colin said. "It wasn't formal. But," he said to Kumiko, "I trust you found your way safely to colorful Brixton." "Christ," Tick said, "aren't half a snot, are you?" "Forgive me," Colin said, grinning. "I meant to mirror the visitor's expectations." "What you are is some Jap designer's idea of an Englishman."
"There were Draculas," she said, "in the underground. They took my purse. They wanted to take you."
"You've come away from your housing, mate," Tick said. "Got you jacked through my deck now." Colin grinned. "Taw." "Tell you something else," Tick said, taking a step toward Colin. "You've got the wrong data in you for what you're meant to be." He squinted. "Mate of mine in Birmingham's just turned you over." He turned to Kumiko. Your Mr. Chips here, he's been tampered with. Do you know that?
No.
To be perfectly honest, Collins said with a toss of his forelock, I've suspected as much. Tick stared off into the matrix as though he were listening to something Kumiko couldn't hear. Yes, he said finally, though it's almost certainly a factory job. 10 major blocks of you. He laughed. Be nice to over. You're supposed to know fucking everything about Shakespeare, aren't you? Sorry, Collins said, but I'm afraid that I do know fucking everything about Shakespeare. Give us a sonnet, then, Tick said, his face wrinkling in a slow-motion wink. Something like dismay crossed Collins' face. You're right. Or bloody Dickens either, Tick crowed. But I do know, think you do, till you're asked a specific. See, they left those bits empty, the ing-lit parts, then filled them with something else. With what, then? Can't say, Tick said. Boy in Birmingham can't fiddle it. Clever he is, but you're that bloody mass biosoft. Tick, Kumiko interrupted, is there no way to contact Sally through the Matrix? Doubt it, but we can try. You'll get to see that macro form I was telling you about in any case. Want Mr. Chips along for company?
Yes, please.
Fine, then, Tick said, then hesitated. But we don't know what's stuffed into your friend here. Something your father paid for, I'd assume. He's right, Collins said.
We'll all go, she said.
Tick executed the transit in real time, rather than employing the bodiless instantaneous shifts ordinarily employed in the Matrix. The yellow plane, he explained, roofed the London Stock Exchange and related city entities. He somehow generated a sort of boat to carry them along, a blue abstraction intended to reduce the possibility of vertigo. As the blue boat glided away from the LSE, Kumiko looked back and watched the vast yellow cube recede. Tick was pointing out various structures like a tour guide. Colin, seated beside her with his legs crossed, seemed amused at the reversal of roles. That's White's, Tick was saying, directing her attention to a modest gray pyramid. The club in St. James. Membership registry, waiting list. Kumiko looked up at the architecture of cyberspace, hearing the voice of her bilingual French tutor in Tokyo, explaining humanity's need for this information space. Icon, waypoints, artificial realities. But it blurred together in memory, like these towering forms as Tick accelerated. The scale of the white macro form was difficult to comprehend. Initially it had seemed to Kumiko like the sky, but now, gazing at it, she felt as though it were something she might take up in her hand, a cylinder of luminous pearl no taller than a chess piece, but it dwarfed the polychrome forms that clustered around it. Well, Colin said jauntily, this really is very peculiar indeed, isn't it? Complete anomaly, utter singularity. But you don't have to worry about it, do you? Tick said. Only if it has no direct bearing on Kumiko's situation, Colin agreed, standing up in the boat shape. Though how can one be certain?
You must attempt to contact Sally, Kumiko said impatiently.
This thing, the macro form, the anomaly, was of little interest, though Tick and Colin both regarded it as extraordinary. Look at it, Tick said. Could have a bloody world in there.
And you don't know what it is?
She was watching Tick. His eyes had the distant look that meant his hands were moving, back in Brixton, working his deck. It's a very great deal of data, Colin said. I just tried to put a line through to that construct, the one she calls Finn, Tick said, his eyes refocusing, an edge of worry in his voice. But I couldn't get through. I'd this feeling, then. Something was there. Waiting. Think it's best we jack out now. A black dot on the curve of pearl, its edges perfectly defined. Fucking hell, Tick said. Break the link, Colin said. Can't, it's got us. Kumiko watched as the blue boat shape beneath her feet elongated, stretched into a thread of azure, drawn across the chasm into that round blot of darkness. And then, in an instant of utter strangeness, she, too, along with Tick and Colin, was drawn out to an exquisite thinness. To find herself in Ueno Park, late autumn afternoon, by the unmoving waters of Shinobazu Pond, her mother seated beside her on a sleek bench of chilly carbon laminate, more beautiful now than in memory. Her mother's lips were full and richly glossed, outlined, Kumiko knew, with the finest and narrowest of brushes. She wore her black French jacket, with the dark fur collar framing her smile of welcome. Kumiko could only stare, huddled there around the cold bulb of fear beneath her heart. "You've been a foolish girl, Kumi," her mother said. "Did you imagine I wouldn't remember you, or abandon you to winter London and your father's gangster servants?" Kumiko watched the perfect lips open slightly over white teeth, teeth maintained, she knew, by the best dentist in Tokyo. "You are dead," she heard herself say. "No," her mother replied, smiling. "Not now. Not here, in Ueno Park. Look at the cranes, Kumi." But Kumiko would not turn her head. "Look at the cranes."
"Fuck right off, you," said Tick, and Kumiko spun to find him there, his face pale and twisted, filmed with sweat, oily curls plastered to his forehead.
"I am her mother."
"Not your mom, understand?"
Tick was shaking, his twisted frame quivering as though he forced himself against a terrible wind.
"Not your mom."
There were dark crescents beneath the arms of the gray suit jacket. His small fists shook as he struggled to take the next step. "You're ill," Kumiko's mother said, her tone solicitous. "You must lie down."
Tick sank to his knees, forced down by an invisible weight.
"Stop it!" Kumiko cried.
Something slammed Tick's face against the pastel concrete of the path.
"Stop it!"
Tick's left arm shot out straight from the shoulder and began to rotate slowly, the hand still balled in a white-knuckled fist. Kumiko heard something give, bone or ligament, and Tick screamed. Her mother laughed. Kumiko struck her mother in the face, and pain, sharp and real, jolted through her arm. Her mother's face flickered, became another face, a gaijin face with wide lips and a sharp, thin nose. Tick groaned.
"Well," Kumiko heard Colin say, "isn't this interesting?"
She turned to him there, astride one of the horses from the hunting print, a stylized representation of an extinct animal, its neck curved gracefully as it trotted toward them. "Sorry it took me a moment to find you. This is a wonderfully complex structure, a sort of pocket universe, bit of everything, actually." The horse drew up before them.
"Toy," said the thing with Kumiko's mother's face, "do you dare speak to me?"
"Yes, actually, I do. You are Lady Three Jane Tessier Ashpool, or rather the late Lady Three Jane Tessier Ashpool, none too recently deceased, formerly of the Villa Straylight. This rather pretty representation of a Tokyo park is something you've just now worked up from Kumiko's memories, isn't it?"
"Die!"
She flung up a white hand. From it burst a form folded from neon.
"No," Colin said, and the crane shattered, its fragments tumbling through him, ghost shards falling away.
"Won't do. Sorry. I've remembered what I am. Found the bits they tucked away in the slots for Shakespeare and Thackeray and Blake. I've been modified to advise and protect Kumiko in situations rather more drastic than any envisioned by my original designers. I am a tactician."
"You are nothing."
At her feet, Tick began to twitch. "You're mistaken, I'm afraid. You see, in here, in this folly of yours, Three Jane, I'm as real as you are. You see, Kumiko," he said, swinging down from the saddle, "Tick's mysterious macro form is actually a very expensive pile of biochips constructed to order, a sort of toy universe. I've run all up and down it, and there's certainly a lot to see, a lot to learn. This person, if we choose to so regard her, created it in a pathetic bid for, oh, not immortality, really,
but simply to have her way, her narrow, obsessive, and singularly childish way. Who would have thought it, that Lady Three Jane's object of direst and most nastily gnawing envy would be Angela Mitchell?
Die! You'll die! I'm killing you! Now!
Keep trying, Colin said, and grinned. You see, Kumiko, Three Jane knew a secret about Mitchell, about Mitchell's relationship to the Matrix. Mitchell, at one time, had the potential to become, well, very central to things, though it's not worth going into. Three Jane was jealous. The figure of Kumiko's mother swam like smoke and was gone.
Oh, dear, Colin said. I've wearied her, I'm afraid. We've been fighting something of a pitched battle at a different level of the command program. Stalemate, temporarily, but I'm sure she'll rally.
Tick had gotten to his feet and was gingerly massaging his arm.
Christ, he said, I was sure she'd dislocated it for me.
She did, Colin said, but she was so angry when she left that she forgot to save that part of the configuration. Kumiko stepped closer to the horse. It wasn't like a real horse at all. She touched its side, cool and dry as old paper.
What shall we do now?
Get you out of here. Come along, both of you. Mount up. Kumiko in front, Tick on behind.
Tick looked at the horse.
On that? They had seen no other people in Ueno Park, as they'd ridden toward a wall of green that gradually defined itself as a very un-Japanese wood.
But we should be in Tokyo, Kumiko protested, as they entered the wood.
It's all a bit sketchy, Colin said, though I imagine we could find a sort of Tokyo if we looked. I think I know an exit point, though. Then he began to tell her more about Three Jane, and Sally, and Angela Mitchell. All of it very strange. The trees were very large at the far side of the wood. They emerged into a field of long grass and wildflowers.
Look, Kumiko said,
as she glimpsed a tall gray house through the branches.
Yes, Colin said. The original's on the outskirts of Paris, but we're nearly there. The exit point, I mean.
Colin, did you see? A woman, just there.
Yes, he said, without bothering to turn his head. Angela Mitchell.
Really? She's here?
No, he said, not yet. Then Kumiko saw the gliders, lovely things, quivering in the wind.
There you go, Colin said. Tick'll take you back in one of...
Bloody hell, Tick protested from behind.
Dead easy, just like using your deck. Same thing in this case.
Up from Margate Road came the sound of laughter, loud drunken voices, the crash of a bottle against brickwork. Kumiko sat very still in the overstuffed chair, eyes shut tight, remembering the glider's rush into blue sky and something else. A telephone began to ring. Her eyes shot open. She lunged up from the chair and rushed past Tick, through his stacks of equipment, looking for the phone. Found it at last, and,
"Homeboy," Sally said, far away, past a soft surf of static. "What the fuck's up?"
"Tick? You okay, man?"
"Sally. Sally, where are you?"
"New Jersey.
Hey, baby? Baby, what's happening?"
"I can't see you, Sally. The screen's blank."
"Phoning from a booth. New Jersey. What's up?"
"I have so much to tell you."
"Shoot," Sally said. "It's my nickel."